eternal critical acclaim and money. I've heard stuff like that. Like, I have no clue how fucking true it is. And obviously that shit doesn't work. That's just kind of like, you know, dark metaphysical mumbo jumbo. But I do think that there's perhaps a causality between being permissive about certain people's drug uses, knowing who can handle it and who can't, because everybody has different threshold levels. And there's a sort of symbolic exchange there, I think.
I see that.
Yeah.
I see that. I think you can understand too, like maybe that interpretation. But I think you can comprehend what happened there without making an appeal to the ritualistic or, you know, some sort of supernatural influence. I think his personal desire, Stephen's personal desire for notoriety, fame, and recognition is so profound that he would overlook the self-destructive behavior of his son and neglect perhaps maybe this role of the father in terms of redirecting someone who is harming themselves, because he's afraid to lose the opportunity to have notoriety. I could totally see that being the case, because I think there is a real thirst and appetite in him for recognition and approval and sort of like a guru, if you will. Like, I think he wants to be perceived as sort of this insightful, all-knowing, transcendent human being. And he's utilizing all of these different vehicles to try to achieve that, whether it be running for politics, working in music. And so I could see him, like, I don't know, rationalizing, or, you know, I'm not sure, but I would, I don't know. Like, when I saw him afterwards, it was interesting because the impression of, like, the way I would imagine a parent who's lost a child and what they would be going through. And I can't say what was happening for him internally. I don't know. But when I saw him, he didn't have any noticeable grief. And that could just have been a coping mechanism. Whoa. Like, that could have just been like, oh, well, I'm just disassociated from what's happening. I'm not experiencing it. But it was more noticeable, the grief in his mother. And then when his father was around, I just didn't sense. And it was pretty close to when he actually died. And I couldn't sense any grief. It wasn't like palpable or anything. And I always remember that evening was awake at his house, because I had built up a lot of anger and resentment towards him for many years. And I kind of had played out this thing in my mind where, like, oh, and it's on site. When I see him, it's on site, dude. Like, I'm gonna go into him. But like something about the tone of that moment, like I just couldn't keep being angry anymore. Because the situation was relatively tragic, you know, like it was tragic. And so I just didn't, it kind of like took a lot of the anger that I had for him away. And it what replaced it was kind of more of a sorrow or even a pity to some extent, that like now you're in this position where your own son has died and he's, you know, he's gone. And then the rest of your relations are pretty alienated as well. Right. And so it seemed like he's kind of getting his karmic retribution in some ways, even maybe more so than what I would have wished upon him. And I certainly was pretty devastated to hear that, you know, Baron passed away. And it's interesting because it's like certain people that you share memories with, when it's just you and that other person, you know, if you want to reminisce or you want to recollect, the other witness is gone. And like, you're just kind of the one person holding that memory now. And I would love to see what he's up to now, you know, had he stuck around, what he would be involved with. And I mean, it is interesting though, like throughout the years, just being able to sort of observe the influence some of these people have had, like with Grimes, for example. I remember I only actually got to meet Grimes in person one time. And this other artist, Dion, who's from Montreal.
Yeah, we played with him, and she was actually at the show in Montreal. This wasn't MuTech. We played at MuTech too with Dean Blunt and Inga Copeland, but we did another small show, and I remember like walking across to the corner store, and I was like, cigarette rolly packs are here like fucking $25 or something. It was kind of a trip, but yeah.
What I remember is like that Dion was, I think, you know, this is speculation. I think he was, you know, he was interested in Grimes. I'll put it that way. I don't know if they were romantic or what, but he felt pretty strongly about her. And he communicated to me and Baron, and this was in the era of GChat, it was through GChat, I remember it. He was like, yeah, you should check out Grimes. You know, he sent me some links to her stuff. And at that point, she wasn't like, I don't think, very known outside of Montreal. I think she had like one blog article on this old blog, Gorilla versus Bear. And it was like, there wasn't a lot of coverage or anything. And so he ended up sending us some stuff. And I heard it, and like it certainly was like pretty polished, and I don't know, it just really wasn't something I felt very strongly about at the time. And I think Baron had talked with Dion, and they concocted or come up with this idea to do like a split release, because she had a label she was working with in Montreal called Arbutus, and it would be like a split album, half Dion, half Grimes. And we just said, okay, yeah, let's roll with this. And we ended up going to South by Southwest one year, and Grimes was there. And like, I remember Baron and I were there with like this Stephanie Francata from Sleepover and Laura Halo. And we were staying at Stephanie's house, and we were doing like they were doing like three or four shows, the whole event. And we were kind of just kicking it, hanging, smoking, chilling. And so I remember we did this one show where she came, and we got to meet. And it was very brief, just like, hey, what's up? And we had communicated via email and on the phone and stuff. But I do remember the guy that was managing her at the time, who's also like part of this label, Arbutus, he told me, he's like, yeah, you know, she's doing like 15 shows. Like, she was just doing so many shows. And in hindsight, I'm like, oh yeah, the thirst and the appetite for something more was already there. Like, she went down there, she was doing so many shows. She was really putting all of herself into it. And it's crazy because like that record in particular, like before we did this split, she was somewhat well-known. And I had no idea, like the next album she did, I think came out on 4AD. And she, I think, got a lot of publicity with that record and exposure, because Hippos and Tanks had a lot of exposure at the time. So she got a lot of exposure through that, and then went on to 4AD and did this record Visions, which really pushed her up and then to kind of catastrophic levels. And then just seeing the whole thing with Elon Musk and just like thinking about, you know, like who he is and like that relationship, and it's pretty crazy. And she's kind of like kept it pretty interesting. I didn't really like understand her worldview at all. I more saw her as a musician, as an artist, but I didn't really see her as like a theoretician. I think she, you know, has some sort of like vision of what the world is, what the world is undergoing at this present time. And yeah, it just, I would never have expected something like that to have happened. And it's really quite crazy.
Yeah, same. I was just kind of like, she looks like somebody who came from like the freak folk scene. And she was just kind of like chilling by herself. And I was like, oh, that's Grimes. She put out Hippos and Tanks, like whatever, you know? Yeah, I had no concept that, I didn't even think she would get signed to a label as big as 4AD at that time. I was kind of, but the thirst that you're talking about, you can really see it. I mean, you don't screw the richest guy in the world unless you don't have that in you, you know? Yeah. But at the time, yeah, it's like her aesthetic wasn't so like cyber and futuristic and capitalistic. It wasn't like,
yeah, I didn't see that at all.
No, I didn't either.
I didn't see that. And I don't know if it was just like dormant or latent, and it was kind of like not expressed.
I saw it in James Ferraro. You know,
what's that?
I saw it in James Ferrara. I was like, this guy might end up working for like